Welcome to AUSA's Army Matters podcast. This is Thought Leaders with Joe Craig. My guest today is Don Snedeker, author of The Black Horse in Vietnam, the 11th Armored Cavalry Regiment in Vietnam and Cambodia, 1966 to 1972. Don Snedeker served in the Black Horse Regiment in Vietnam and as a troop commander post-Vietnam. He was on active military service until 1992. For the past 20 years, Don has served as the historian of the 11th Armored Cavalry Veterans of Vietnam and Cambodia. Don, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Black Horse.
Well, you know, I want to have you tell the story of the Black Horse. So for the benefit of our listeners, I'd like to start with the basics. Can you tell us the difference between an armored cavalry unit and other armor units?
There was only one armored cavalry regiment in Vietnam, and it was the 11th Armored Cavalry Regiment, which is traditionally called the Black Horse Regiment. And it consisted of three squadrons, and each squadron had armored cavalry assault vehicles called ACAVs. Each squadron had tanks, artillery howitzers, mortars, and helicopters. So each squadron, about 1,000 troopers in each squadron, was a complete military team, a combined arms team. In addition, at the regimental level, was an armored engineer company, an air cavalry troop, a medical company, and all of the various combat support and combat service support elements that made the regiment into an independent fighting force. It was unlike any other unit in Vietnam. There were armored cavalry squadrons in each of the infantry divisions, but their organizations were smaller and did not have all of the supporting elements. So what made the Black Horse unique in Vietnam was that it combined under one individual's command the ability to, as we sometimes said, find trouble and then take care of that trouble.
All right. Well, they were certainly getting ready to do that in Vietnam. And then so you had General William Westmoreland looking to increase U.S. forces in country for the year 1966. And his group included a request for an armored cavalry regiment. But then his command immediately starts to backtrack and wants to switch instead to a mechanized infantry brigade. How do they end up selecting the Black Horse, and why was the Army so skeptical about armored cav?
Well, the common understanding, at least amongst the infantry mafia that ran the Army at that time, was that a counterinsurgency fight in a jungle environment was an infantryman's war. That is, that if tanks could play a role, it would be to protect fire support bases or to open roads. But there was no expectation or understanding of what armored vehicles, tanks, armored cavalry assault vehicles, howitzers, could do off the roads in the jungle. And it wasn't until a year after the regiment had arrived in Vietnam that the leadership, Westmoreland on down, started to understand we've got something here that's pretty special, that has mobility, has firepower, that is unlike any other unit in Vietnam at the time. And so it took quite a bit of convincing to make that happen, however.
Right. And I definitely want to get into expanded roles for the Black Horse down the road. But first, I'm wondering if we could talk about some of the early months after arrival. Can you give a little more detail on like exactly what types of missions they were handling?
Initially, as I indicated, the regiment was given the mission in most cases to open roads, the lines of communication, both for military traffic and for civilian traffic. The regiment was located east of Saigon, astride a major highway, Highway Number 1. And this road was important, obviously, for military vehicle convoys, but also for getting food from the countryside into the capital region of Saigon. And so the mission initially was open the roads, keep them open, stop the Viet Cong and North Vietnamese Army from ambushing military convoys and taxing civilian farmers, etc., who were trying to get their products to Saigon. Over time, however, the regiment convinced the leadership we can do more than that. We got to get off the roads in order to accomplish even that mission. And they did that, especially in late 66 and early 67.
So they're building confidence among other commanders that they're working with. And then you mentioned that the Tet Offensive from early 68 was really a major turning point for the Black Horse. Can you explain how so?
When General Wayand, who was the two field force commander, anticipated that Tet was going to happen, and he was one of the few that believed that there was going to be a major operation, a major offensive by the enemy around the Tet holiday, which is the Vietnamese New Year, he sent the Black Horse furthest away from the capital with the expectation that if he needed to get them back quickly to the capital, he could do so because the regiment had the mobility, had the firepower, and the mental agility to be able to change missions. And that's precisely what happened. When the attack came, General Wayne called Black Horse 6, the commander of the regiment, and said, "Get here now." And it was pretty much those kinds of words, "Get here now." Mm-hmm. And the three squadrons were out in the jungle doing different missions, and they got the radio call, "Turn around, head for Saigon, more information later." And that's precisely what they did. And I believe that no other unit was equipped or ready to be able to do that kind of mission at that time.
Riding to the rescue, as you mentioned.
Precisely.
All right. So, you know, you talk about the importance of General Wayne there. You also have major change after Tet, Mini Tet, when General Creighton Abrams takes over from Westmoreland. What were the implications of that change for the regiment?
The biggest change was that Abrams was a cavalryman. He started out in the horse cavalry. He understood cavalry. He commanded a cavalry regiment. He commanded a tank battalion in World War II that acted like horse cavalry. And so when he took over, the regiment came into its own because he understood what he had and assigned the regiment missions that nobody else could do, but the regiment could do exceptionally well, again, because of the mobility. And it's three-dimensional. It's helicopters as well as armor. The armored protection that's protecting the crews, and the firepower that nobody else had.
Now, throughout the book, you know, the book is chock full of descriptions of different battles and actions. Obviously, too many to recount in the book, and we'll have to leave a lot of the details to the readers. But I do want to talk a little bit about 69. You describe 1969 as the bloodiest year for the Black Horse. And I was especially struck by the description of the Battle of Northern Binh Long Province. That's something I hadn't known about before. Would you give us a quick overview?
It's not very well known outside of those who were there, but it happened in August of 69. And it was, in fact, around Loc Ninh and Quan Loi. The 1st Cav had a brigade there, and the regiment was there. And because of some really good intel work, captured North Vietnamese prisoners, soldiers who spilled the beans, to include a lieutenant who knew the whole plan. There were regiments from each of the four enemy divisions that were in that region that were marshaling for an attack on Loc Ninh, An Loc, and Quan Loi. And because of the really superb intel work, the air cavalry troop, arrow scouts, and the arrow rifle platoon getting in there and finding out what's going on, and then Colonel Leach, who was the regimental commander, gathering his forces, reinforced with a mechanized infantry battalion, two battalions from the 1st Cav Division, a Cav squadron from the quarter horse from the 1st Infantry Division, was able to absolutely devastate this enemy offensive that was designed to make big headlines for the peace negotiations that were just going on in Paris. And it fizzled for the bad guys. And it was a huge victory for the Black Horse, for the 1st Cav, for the 1st Infantry, and for the Republic of Vietnam soldiers that fought alongside them.
Right. To follow up on those successes, You then go on to describe the incursions into Cambodia. Can you explain why the Black Horse was finally sent in 1970 and what they did there and what they accomplished?
Well, President Nixon decided that this was a propitious time with the change in government in Cambodia to clean out the enemy sanctuaries that had existed on the Cambodian side of the South Vietnam-Cambodia border for years. And so the commander in Saigon decided the unit that has the best possibility of going in quickly and clearing things out and then taking on whatever enemy forces might be there was the 11th Cav. They put in, obviously, air mobile infantry, but once on the ground, the air mobile infantry was very light. They had machine guns and a couple of mortars, but no heavy weapons, and were outgunned by North Vietnamese Army units that were there. And so the 11th Cav was sent in, and 4 days into the operation, Black Horse 6 again got a call and was told, stop what you're doing, turn 90 degrees to the right, head for Snoll, which was a huge crossroads for the North Vietnamese Army supply operations. Get there as quickly as possible and clean it out. We need that crossroads. And that's exactly what happened. And so here's a regiment of armored cavalry on the road, literally doing 40, 50 miles an hour up the road, knocking down anything that's in its way, crossed three destroyed bridges and got there and took on an enemy regiment and accomplished the mission. It was a cavalryman's dream.
Yeah, you describe the glee that a lot of the cavalrymen were feeling. They were saying it was like World War II movies that they had grown up on.
Exactly. I mean, some told me about hearing trumpet calls and sabers flashing. And, you know, as I say in the book, we cavalrymen are an ornery lot, but we like our traditions. And, I mean, that's just a fantastic visual of all of these armored vehicles headed for Snoll. Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead.
Yeah, and they captured or killed, I think, 9,000 enemy soldiers, captured a lot of ammunition and weaponry, had this tremendous success. But then the following year, you see the regiment's 1st Squadron and 3rd Squadron standing down. So the 2nd Squadron was left there. So why did 2nd Squadron remain, and how did their mission change at that point?
Well, initially, the expectation was that the cavalry regiment would be the ideal force to remain in country because of the mission, which was going to be very much an economy of force mission. Because of the Vietnamization program, the South Vietnamese Army, the Army of the Republic of Vietnam, ARVN, were taking over most of the fighting. And so the residual American forces had this economy of force mission. As someone said, imagine trying to fight a war, but you can't get anybody killed, because those were kind of the unwritten rules, that you had to watch out for casualties, but oh, by the way, you still had to do your mission. And so not on the front lines where there was a conventional war going on between the South Vietnamese and North Vietnamese armies, but closer to Saigon, east and northeast of Saigon, in traditional areas that the enemy had established themselves for years and years, going in and cleaning out these nests. But, oh, by the way, please, not too many casualties. Really tough way to fight a war.
And then, of course, in the following year, in early 72, you got the final elements standing down. Oh, I love that story with the chaplain and the brigadier general as they get ready to send the colors back to the States. Can you tell us a little bit about the final days and then give us an update on the regiment since that time?
Well, in early 72, it became apparent that almost all of the U.S. military forces were being pulled out of Vietnam. There were strong indications of an upcoming North Vietnamese offensive out of Cambodia and Laos. And in fact, within days of the regiment standing down and going home, the so-called Easter offensive happened. And so the regiment indeed did stand down. The 2nd Squadron and the Air Cavalry Troop did stand down. And the Color Guard, went back to Fort Lewis, Washington, and expected that they were going to be greeted at least with some sort of ceremony or some sort of honor guard. Nothing. The man in charge of the color guard had to bum a ride over to Fort Lewis from McCord Air Force Base, walked into the headquarters. The only man there was Department of the Army civilian. And Major Sismadia said, okay, what do I do with the colors? This is the Black Horse Regiment. This is, you know, something special. And the DA civilian looked around and said, put him in the corner. I'm the only one here.
Well, it was certainly a quiet end to that chapter, but it wasn't long before the colors were brought out again. So
a couple of months later, the regiment was reactivated. The entire regiment in Germany took the place of the 14th Armored Cavalry Regiment on the border, Bad Hersfeld, Bad Kissingen, and Fulda, and stayed there until the wall came down. I served there along with a whole lot of other Black Horse veterans as well as new Black Horse troopers. And it was something else to see the stand down of the regiment in Fulda. I mean, the mayor of Fulda went to Washington, flew from Fulda to Washington and said to the Army leadership, what are you doing with my regiment? That's how welcome we were on the border in Germany. And so it was a sad day, but again, shortly thereafter, the regiment was reactivated as the opposing force regiment at the National Training Center. And that's a mission that they still complete today.
And along with the amazing reputation they enjoy there, you know, the unit patch is probably one of the most recognizable. Can you give us a little background on the history of that? Because I found that to be a lot of fun.
Well, just something that is just kind of a funny highlight. Jerry Utterback, Command Sergeant Major, retired. He was a young trooper in Vietnam in the regiment, and he just was so thrilled to be wearing this Black Horse patch. And later in his career, he said, the Black Horse patch is like a 57 Chevy. The 57 Chevy is the most recognizable car on the road. And the Black Horse patch is the most recognizable patch in the Army.
You've certainly done the Black Horse a great service with the new book. And I just want to thank you for being our guest on the podcast today.
Thank you, sir. Black Horse.
So again, Don Snedeker's new book is The Black Horse in Vietnam, the 11th Armored Cavalry Regiment in Vietnam and Cambodia, 1966 to 1972.
To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. Join us next Monday with a brand new episode of Army Matters with Army Real Talk. The Army Matters podcast series is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's Professional Association, member-supported, Army-connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission to educate, inform, and connect with the total Army, our industry partners, and our supporters of a strong national defense. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@AUSA.org. Have a great Army Day. Hooah.